Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Well, everybody, this is your old buddy Blue Otter, and I'm coming to you from the first story of a two-story U.S. government BIA outhouse, where we're, like the vassals of old Europe, we're very much used to being shat upon from a very great height. And anyway, we've got Elizabeth Russell, our guest on the line, and our co-host Mark Borcherding. And say hello, everybody.
Hi, Otter. Hi, Mark. This is Elizabeth.
Hi.
And we got the Badger. Oh, yeah, the Badger's, the Badger's here. Have you got a totem
That's
animal?
The nickname of my cat is the Badger.
What's your totem animal, Elizabeth?
An owl, a white owl.
An owl, oh, okay. We'll have to get an owl on here. I haven't got one on here yet, but we'll work on that. And but anyway, yeah, Elizabeth, let me start out by saying that back in 1977, I wrote a poem, and in that poem there was some very cryptic things that I didn't understand until just a few days ago when I was putting
That's
together.
That's funny, 'cause I understand what you're saying, but just a few days ago you're putting together.
Right, so I'm putting together this website, you know, the last couple of weeks for Chief Rogers, and the poem talked about something about the dance of the bee, and I had no idea what that meant until I was looking up some information on the prophetess Deborah, and I found out that her name meant bee, and the reason why I was looking up Deborah is because I was looking up information on matriarchy. And, of course, there's a movement in the LDS Church, you know, for the ordination of women. And you know, Brigham Young was on a mission.
I've been at those historic meetings.
Right. And Brigham Young was on a mission in, I believe, England. And he was just stepping off the steamboat when he had the
heard the news that Joseph had been murdered, but he didn't receive those teachings. So the part of the church that went west and followed him didn't know about what Joseph did with women. So you're going to be talking about matriarchy.
Apparently, and African Americans, I would throw in there. But anyway, I hear you, Blue Water.
Absolutely. So I've the spirit sometimes teaches you over a very long period of time.
Wow. Oh, same here. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I've had major revelations in just the last few days. Yeah. Over a very long time. I'm with you. We're on the same page.
Well, and let me also say, Elizabeth contacted me because she had some promptings that she needed to get out of California. I'll let her tell that story.
There's probably a few people feeling like that.
Right.
What did you say, Mark?
There's probably a few other people feeling like that too.
God sent me those confirmations. I got some. Yeah, apparently you have too. Wow, and so you're a confirmation. Wow, and I just have to say, my favorite class I took last semester as a PhD student at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco was a class in a different department. I'm in the Women's Spirituality Department, and I took a class from the Integrated Health Department, and it was called Indigenous Medicine. And our assignment was to research the ancestral medicine of the ancestors of our choosing. And you know who I chose? Was my Mormon ancestors, because on my mother's side of the family, I'm a seventh generation ethnic Mormon. And I, you know, academics understand this is like an ethnic group in America. You know, when you're seventh generation something, that's an ethnic group, and that's amazing. And I did, And anyway, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. I tend to go off on tangents, so I'm like, okay, Mark,
me too.
Help me to remember.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, get me back to where we started, because, I'm going to have to avoid doing that on this show. I'm going to try to stay. What was the last thing we were talking about?
Oh, we were talking about your promptings about going to leaving California.
Yeah.
And going to – well, first, let me introduce
this. Well, that was the same semester. That ties in with CIAS.
Let me introduce people a little bit to the prophecy.
Please.
That we're talking about. There is a Tuscarora prophecy that talks about a time when Indians will be released from their reservation, and that the only thing that would cause that is like a financial collapse in the United States, and that they would realize that that they would go to the hilly country, and they would burn tobacco. Yep, and they would burn tobacco and get to know each other once again. And that's Mad Bear Anderson.
Daughter.
Right.
Oh my gosh, Mad Bear.
Yep. So I'll let you.
I know you're asking me the questions. I'm like, I don't want to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I need to. Okay. So CIAS. Another class I had this last semester, I want to talk more about my favorite class, Indigenous Medicine, but another class I had this semester was a class on dreaming, and that was in a different department too. And so in this class on dreaming, oh my goodness, our instructor was amazing. And so the California Institute of Integral Studies, I should just say, integral studies, integral means like holistic, whole, holy, you know, this is a fully accredited, you know, WASC accredited university, college, institute of higher education on the West Coast in California that acknowledges, the reality of the spirit, of the divine. And you are absolutely free to, you know, converse on the subject and integrate that into your studies. And, you know, in most, you know, academies, you know, that's just absolutely, like, verboten, you know, like,
yep.
You know. So So we have this class on dreaming, and you know, we started in this January, and I have to go back a little bit because, so this is January of 2013, but I have to go slightly back to December of 2012 and the whole, like, you know, Aztec calendar, Mayan calendar, you know, all this kind of stuff, and what was going on in 2012, because, you know, it was funny because there was all of this hype about the calendar, you know, the whatever Aztec Mayan calendar in 2012, right? And my son was actually having some really serious promptings by the Holy Spirit about just, you know, what the divine was going on and what about to do and about to happen, and just major moves of God and, you know, goddess, the divine. And I was like, yeah, I'm totally with you, son. You know, like, he was just really, like, on fire with the Spirit. Like, we need to, like, we need to get, like, supplies. You know, we need to get, like, you know, ready for stuff. Like, you know, and I'm like, I totally agree with you. You know, I know it's all soon and whatever. And, you know, we're in the last days and blah, blah, blah. But I was just like, but I also know there's a lot of stuff on the History Channel and on cable right now about, like, the calendar, and there's a little hype, and I'm just totally, like, you know, like, maybe he's just watching too much television. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'm with you, but, like, I don't know. But, no, he was totally on fire with the Spirit, and I ate my words or whatever because in, yeah, because basically I was, like, I saw what the adversary and sort of Babylon was doing with their whole counterfeit thing of the significance of 2012, but it was harder for me to see what the, you know, what God was actually doing. And then the whole predicted date, December 21st, 2012, my life absolutely changed drastically forever. And I thought that that particular date, it was just, you know, there's a lot of hype and Babylon and cable, but it was like that day, my life seriously changed, and I realized it really was the end of an age and the beginning of a new age. Jesus started talking to me. In January, I was taking this class on dreaming in my PhD program, and we had to keep a pen and paper by our bed and write our dreams every day. And all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, in December 2010, I started having two major prophetic dreams that came true that were major. But in January, I started having some visions. Like, there's different degrees of visions, and there's different types of visions. But I was having just some really simple but just dramatic visions. And Jesus spoke to me, and, like, my life changed forever. And because I was in an academic program, I was, like, keeping daily notes on this. I mean, this is all documented, you know, and, like, I even got to talk about this with my professor, and, you know, and she was very supportive of just what was happening and understood what was happening, because I was in this amazing school called CIIS, which I'm really glad, Otter, that you publicized, like, in, you know, the publicity for this interview, because it is, yeah, I don't know. I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and this is definitely a very special place. But at the same time, unfortunately, in January, as I documented in my dream journal, I had a visionary dream of an earthquake in California. But my dream wasn't about the earthquake itself, which is very interesting, as well as the outcome of the dream with smiling, happy people, which is also very interesting, because this was a dream about a cataclysmic event. And I just want to make sure you guys are there, because I'm not hearing anything on the other end of the line. Are you guys
still
there?
We're still here.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to finish the story. I'm just making sure my cell phone, like, the battery hasn't died. Okay, we're good. Okay, so the dream was very brief. All of these dream/visions that I've had in the last few months since January of 2013, they're very brief. I call them kind of like picture visions, or they're kind of like one card tarot readings. It's like a picture and some information that goes with it. It's really interesting. But anyway, so again, I've had, you know, really interesting experience in the past, but this is like a new level. So since that crazy Mayan calendar thing happened. So anyway, What the first one was in January, and it was of a single mom and her son. And I'm a single mom, and I have one son. I only have one kid. He's a boy, and his name is Sage, of course. And it was interesting because it wasn't of us specifically. It was like generic. So that to me, it's almost like a cosmic, you know, import to this dream. It wasn't just about me. You know, it was, included me. You know, but what it was a single mom and her son were driving in a car, and there was this caravan of cars behind them. And they were driving up a hill towards the mountains, and it reminded me of driving to Utah, because that's a trip that I've made out of state a number of times in my car, and into the Rocky Mountains. And so they're driving into the mountains, but they were also driving to a place of safety and refuge. And what they were coming from, and this is what's really cool, there was a caravan of cars behind them. There's a whole bunch of people following them and coming with them. And there had been an earthquake in California. It was like, I don't know if it happens before they left, or while they left, or after they left. But what I know is that this single mom and her son and this caravan of cars behind them made it to a place of safety and to a place of refuge. And in this particular, you know, scene, it just reminded me of my journeys up into the Rocky Mountains. And there's a lot of prophecies about that place. But it's interesting because later my dream visions have taken me somewhere else. And I would have thought that they would have taken me to that place. But they are taking me to another place. But anyway, what my professor pointed out when I reported this one to them that I thought was very interesting was that, you know, that this was a dream about a cataclysmic earthquake on the West Coast. And my feeling, too, was it wasn't just California, but it was just like stuff was going on with the West Coast, like, you know, an earthquake in California maybe, but just some cataclysmic stuff. And these people got out and they made it and they were happy. And the whole thing that my professor pointed out was that in the end of the dream, they were smiling and they were happy. And no matter what we talk about tonight, and I've had some dreams and visions, and one of them I need to tell you about before we came out because it was of a major fire, and people I love were evacuated, and this was in our area, and I did have a vision that came true. So we need to talk about that. But I just want to say that my professor, in the first vision that I had, she pointed out that everybody was happy in the end, and they were smiling. And so I just want to give people hope tonight that whatever we talk about, that, you know, that that's what I want people to focus on.
Now, before you go any further,
that's a good place to take a pause.
Before you go any further, I want to, if your mind hasn't been blown by now, it's about to be, because I'm going to read you. I converted your birth date to your Hebrew birth date, which is the 23rd of Shivan. And then I looked up your Torah portion, and I sent this to you in the mail. You were born during the portion of the Torah called Shlach Lecha. And
okay.
I've studied
Biblical Hebrew.
This is in Numbers 13:1 through 15:41. And it's talking about Moses saying, send men to scout the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelite people, blah, blah, blah. But get this. This is, and it talks about, you know, the men that he sent out, one from each tribe. And he said, when Moses sent them to scout the land of Canaan, he said to them, go up there into the Negev and into the hill country. Okay. All right. And here at the end, there's a lot more to it, but he said, and this is literally your life instructions. You probably never heard them, but it says, this is the Lord said to Moses as follows, speak to the Israelite people, instruct them to make for themselves fringes on the corners of their garment throughout the ages. Let them attach a cord of blue to the fringe at each corner. And, but, you know, I sent that to you in email. So, I mean, this thing about going to the hill country.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God.
more and more interesting. Yeah, yeah. And it has to do with the relocation of the 10 tribes of Israel.
I know I'm being gathered. I know we're all being gathered right now.
You may or may not know this, but the Cherokees know that, you know, we have 7 clans, but we knew that there were 5 that were missing.
Five is my number. 5 rules my life and every significant person in my life.
And we expected them to join us someday. But anyway, your Haftarah was about, you know, Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent 2 spies, and they went out to reconnoiter the region of Jericho. And that's what you're doing is you're going out to spy.
I'm a pioneer and a scout. There's lots of people following me. I have to say that I've had a bunch of dreams and visions, and I don't know how many shows, if we're going to do this in one show or more than one show, you know, to talk about a lot of things we could talk about. But I have to say that, you know, the Bible says that, you know something by its fruits. And the fruits that have been born from me sharing the dreams and visions that I've had since January of 2013 are me baptizing people in swimming pools. I mean, people, just spiritual revival, like just amazing fruit that is being born. And like, yeah, I definitely know that the gathering is taking place and that, you know, the wheat is being gathered for sure. And I have to say, because I'm from the Bay Area, so anybody's listening in the Bay, don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, wait till you see the there is water that the community that the Republic of Mexico has promised us is a right at Amistad Dam, and it's a little community of where the engineers, you know, that built the dam. It's just been sitting there for a long time, and it's not used.
Oh my goodness!
It's just guarded, but there's leaks under the dam, and there's a lot of places where, you know, people just come to relax, and there's pools, and you know, we've got a piece of the river, and it's a very natural place, if you go to, you can go to our YouTube channel. We've got pictures of what it looks like, or the video.
I started to watch your wedding, Otter. I was amazed because, you know, the marriage supper of the Lamb is about, you know, we're on the cusp of the Great Tribulation and all the prophecies and the, in the Bible, and the marriage supper of the Lamb is about to take place. That's interesting. I started to watch your wedding on the Cherokee Nation of Mexico YouTube website, which I was totally stoked to discover yesterday. And I can't wait to watch the rest. I think that's awesome. That's very, it's a harbinger of things to come.
And I also looked up the gematria for your name, Elizabeth Russell.
I wrote a paper in that same dream class about gematria. Okay, tell me,
yeah.
what is it?
Well, it's gematria 1, just Elizabeth Russell is 194. It's to be right or straight, to be right or just, to be in the right and in the forensic sense, to gain one's cause, to be righteous, upright, and good, straightness in the physical sense, rectitude, moral love, being morally right, blamelessness or probity, deliverance, prosperity, or happiness. And you're working on your destiny. You're doing a good job.
Ironic. This is synchronistic. Is right before the interview, I went out to dinner, and the order, the number on the menu that I ordered was number 94. So that's why it's 194. Oh, my gosh. Well, my name Elizabeth in Hebrew means consecrated to God,
mm-hmm.
and I'm the firstborn. My mom had 8 children, and I was the first of all of them. And, you know, of course, the firstborn is always consecrated to God, and I don't even think my parents really consciously realized that. I mean, you know, but I know they were inspired to give me my name, and I have absolutely been consecrated to God since birth. That is absolutely true. Like,
yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah, L is a Beth. Beth means a house, and L is the name of the Lord. So
Elizabeth,
your name really.
And even Russell. Do you know in the root Jerusalem, RSL is the center of Jerusalem? And if you know anything about Hebrew, you know the vowels are kind of, you know, those are flexible. It's all about the consonants.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
RSL
Russell.
Is the center of Jerusalem. Yeah, and RSL means, it means red hair or rosy complexion.
That's right.
And it comes from the French Norman, and it's connected to, you know, the House of Stuart and the Merovingians and the bees. You know, the Merovingians are connected to the bees. I don't know if you know that.
Ah, yeah, about that.
Do you know the first Merovingian, Childeric, do you know what they found in his grave, Otter and Mark?
Uh-uh.
1,000 gold and jeweled bees and
wow.
one or two crystal spheres. They're like Urim and Thummim's.
I'll be dark. Do you know who
yeah.
was the founder of the founding mother of the Merovingians? When Zedekiah knew that they were coming for him, so he sent Mulek, his son, with a colony
yeah.
over
oh,
here because
yeah.
the Canaanites.
Yes, you're refreshing my memory.
Solomon had contracted with the king of Tyre, and they had been sailing up and down the Mississippi River, and they knew
yes.
the entire world. And anyway, so
yes.
they sent Mulek with a colony
as
over here.
As did Joseph of Arimathea. Yes,
but he sent. His cousin Jeremiah, who was the high priest at the time,
yes.
who would
yes.
have had charge of the ark, but
yes.
put him on a ship with his two daughters,
yes.
Tia Tepi.
One of them Tamar Tifi?
And Scotta.
Tamar Tifi, right?
Yeah, it would have been Tefi and Scotta. And
yes, but I thought it was Tamar
Tefi. Yeah,
Tamar
well, it was either Tamar or Tia Tefi, and
Tia Tefi.
But they dropped her off in Spain, and she was the founder of the Milesian line of kings.
Well, okay. Well, I don't know if they were connected to Eleanor of Aquitaine, but she's my grandmother from Spain and France and England a million times over. Eleanor,
mm-hmm.
and she was responsible for the Holy Grail mythos. We wouldn't have the Holy Grail mythos without Eleanor of Aquitaine. And she
That's
was my
right.
ancestor 50 million times on both of my parents' side.
And,
so, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, they took Tefi to Northern Ireland, and she married King Hariman,
mm.
who was a prince
yes.
of the tribe of Dan. Jeremiah
you,
took
okay,
off.
I have to tell you this about. Yeah, okay, tell
Jeremiah,
me finish, yeah.
Jeremiah took off on a boat. With the mysterious box on the deck of the ship and headed west
wow.
and was never seen again.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So maybe
you know
maybe,
there isn't. Oh,
you just you don't know the ark is probably somewhere over here in the Americas, and you know Joseph
yeah.
Smith was aware of this, and he. You know, he knew the Cherokee had an ark, and he was
yes.
looking to see what we had. But by the time he got
yes.
around to looking for it, it had already been stolen by the Lenape.
Well,
I know
the Cherokee had an ark, but so what about the Ethiopian ark? Like, how does all of this fit together? Did the Ethiopians also have an ark? Is there more than one ark?
Well, they. It nobody really knows. All they really know is an approximate time period that it disappeared in.
I mean, I have to wonder if there's more than one, though. You know, because
well,
I don't know. I mean, we don't know. We'll find out eventually.
from what I understand, from talking with Dr. Rogers, he knew that his predecessor, there was a Cherokee doctor named Long, and
mm-hmm.
he knew that Dr. Long knew that there was some silver. There were some silver plates that may have copies of what was in the Cherokee Ark, and they made records on whatever they. You know, in that area, there was a lot of silver.
Wow.
But,
we could talk about the Ark of the Covenant all day. I mean, seriously,
course,
the most cutting-edge stuff, yeah.
Right, and of course, there's the other two-thirds of the sealed portion of the Book of Mormon. I mean, you know, who knows what happened to that.
Yeah.
So,
And truthfully, but, no, I do
but
believe Jersey had
Rogers,
an arc or the arc. We had metal plates.
All we know is there were metal plates.
It was
guarded 24/7 by two warriors, and they had special arrows that were bronze tipped, which means they would have been brought across the Eastern Ocean when we migrated. And our high priest kept the same Levitical laws that were laid down by Moses. Their feet had to live in a stone house. Feet never touched the ground when he traveled.
Oh wow! Oh,
and his only job was to go to each Cherokee town once a year and read him the law.
Oh wow! Yeah, no, I actually do know a lot about all of this, but I'm also just like kind of just marveling at hearing it all again, and you know, a new thing here and there, and yeah, I'm with you. Wow.
Of course, you know, most Cherokee people are totally ignorant of this, but you can't blame them because the Eastern Band.
But there's a lot of American Indians who are absolutely aware of what you're talking about too, though.
Oh,
I have to say, from many different quarters. They don't all know each other. They don't all, you know, many different quarters.
Walker Calhoun, absolutely. There's a lot of them, the Eastern Band apparently is listening to Dr. Rogers because they recently put out a video, saying that the Mayans and Aztecs were our descendants, and because we migrated, you know, across the Eastern Ocean, and
I've been studying this deeply.
But anyway, I've talked too much. Go ahead.
No, you haven't. No, I think we're going to have to do more than one show, definitely. But
sure.
We'll focus on this one for now.
Oh, and
I don't know. Where do you guys want to go?
I got to keep an eye on in case somebody calls in. And
absolutely. We're just all over the map right now, though. And there's probably a lot of new listeners too. They're like, what the heck?
Sure. And folks,
we know what we're talking about. That's why on one of my publicity, I was just like, what I put on my publicity was just a couple of Indians talking about Indian stuff.
Right. Well, if you're out there,
if you're an Indian, it's like you'll get it. Like,
well,
I don't know.
There's so much. By the way, let me give the number out in case people want to call in.
Let's get some other voices here.
It's 347-996-3318. It's right on the page that you're listening to the interview, or you can Skype in. Just put on your headset and get on, you know, and push the little blue S, and that'll connect you with us. But go ahead.
Well, where should we go from here at this moment in space and time?
You were talking about, your visions and stuff and what your
We could definitely finish some of that trajectory and all that. Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah, let's tie up some loose ends.
Well, you're like me.
Okay.
Your mind works a million miles an hour, and you get tangential, and you forget where the heck you were.
I know.
I know.
Okay, but that's a good place to, that's a good loose end to tie up. Okay, so January, the California West Coast earthquake cataclysmic vision. Okay, then, oh no, this is bad. I'm starting to get an echo, and it's distracting. I don't know.
Just to try to ignore it. It'll go away.
I'm trying to think maybe if I move. Let me see if I can move my location really briefly if it'll...
It's just
Skype. Oh, okay.
It'll go
better.
Away.
Okay, good.
It'll
okay.
pass.
So, see, February, March. I'm trying to think of one of the next visions that I had that led me to where I am now. Oh, my goodness. Well, this is really crazy. On March 19th, 2013. Okay, yeah. Yeah, this is probably the next one. March 19th, 2013, this is not long after January, I lay down to go to bed. Are you guys still there?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I laid down to go to bed, and I had my pen and paper because I was still in my dream class because, you know, we go from, like, January to May. So I was in March. I was still in my dream class. I had my pen and paper on my bed, and I lay down. And the thing about these sort of, like, picture visions type experiences is that they usually happen when I'm going to sleep or waking up, which is really interesting.
Right.
It's not when I'm dead asleep. It's not like a regular dream because it's like if you know anything about, you know, the electromagnetic, you know, frequency
brainwaves
that your brain is operating on,
mm-hmm.
right? When you're – it's different when you're – it's, you know, between sleeping and waking. It's a whole
– right.
It's its own whole thing, you know, and that's when a lot of revelation comes from God and from the divine, you know, whatever words you want to use. And so, you know, I've had a lot of this stuff was going on when I was waking up and going to sleep. And anyway, so on March 19th, I just lay down. I hadn't fallen asleep yet. I'm hearing an owl. All right, is that
Oh, did you hear an owl?
You silly guys. I love y'all Indians. Okay, so anyway, I was going to sleep, and I had my pen and paper, and all of a sudden, I wasn't asleep, though. I saw, oh my gosh, this is crazy, you guys. I mean, I'm telling you guys, this is a whole new level. 2013 is a whole new level. I've had all kinds of crazy mystical experiences in my life, but this was a whole new level. I saw a date, and it flashed into my head. And it was June 30th, 1934, if I remember correctly. I've got it written down, of course. I turned it in for credit at an accredited university. And, oh my gosh. And then I saw this quick scene of, like, camping in the wilderness. Like, I saw a tent and, like, a Dutch oven over a fire, something kind of like, you know, campfire and the wilderness scene, something camping kind of thing. But I saw this date, and I wrote it down. I was, like, too tired to, you know, do anything but go to sleep. I wrote it down and went to sleep. And I woke up the next morning, and part of the deal was that that day that this happened to me, my mom was fasting for me because, like, I was going through some challenging times in my life. And I think it was part of it was, like, my mom was fasting for me for whatever, for me to, like, help me. But also, this was within a couple of days of the equinox, the spring equinox. And that's really significant. I mean, and my son actually was born on the spring equinox. And also, speaking of Mormon studies, Joseph Smith, all of the visitations that he received from angels, like the angel Moroni or whatever,
right.
happened on, like, equinoxes or solstices. And my friend Portlock and his friend, yeah, there's some documentation, you know, there's some scholarly stuff documenting that, you know, that a lot of Joseph Smith experiences happens, like, around those special times of year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on, it was March 19th, so it was right by the spring equinox. My mom was fasting and praying for me because I was going through some rough times. And, like, I saw this date and this vision of camping. And the next morning I, like, Googled the date, and I was like, oh, my gosh. The date, it was a famous historical period.
Yeah.
And as we know from biblical studies, like from the book of Isaiah, you know, and everything else, and even the Book of Mormon and everything, like, history repeats itself, you know, it's cyclical. And so it's like something doesn't just happen once, but, you know, things will happen again and again. It's kind of an archetypal thing. I mean, people describe it in different ways. But the bottom line was this date was the date of the Night of the Long Knives in World
yep.
War II Germany. And this was right before Hitler's coup or whatever, you know, Hitler taking over. And it was when they went all night in the middle of the night, door to door, either arresting people or killing people. Most of the people were killed and not even arrested. And, you know, who would not go along with the new regime, with the takeover, with Hitler. If you weren't in line, you know, you were gone. And, oh, my God, and then I see the scene of camping in the wilderness. That was interesting. That is
well,
I shared that with people. That changed a lot of people's lives.
Well, the pattern of a historically what happens is that the government will nudge you, then they will then they will shove, then they'll shoot.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And then we're in between, you know,
right?
Well, you know, the poor crazy woman that you know, got killed in Washington, D.C. the other day. The witnesses say she was literally, after they pulled the kid out, they just executed her.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't doubt that. Yeah, at all. Yeah, you know. I know how it goes. Yeah, so anyway, so then after that, I would say probably the third major vision that I had was of the Hill Country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of following along the hills of the camping scene after June 30th, 1934, and the earthquake. And that was really cool. That has been my muse and my inspiration for the last few months. And I'm just, you know, every day, I'm so excited because my third vision was I was shown, it was just this picture vision of, it felt like I was standing next to somebody. But anyway, I was shown Texas, and I was shown Austin, and I was shown a place north of Austin and or northwest of Austin. And this is weird because all of my revelations about Texas have been kind of this weird dual thing. It's kind of hard to explain. But I had this idea that I was shown these hills. The graphic vision was of these hills and these little roads that would wrap around the hills. And I had this idea that where this road, like that I was being shown, because I couldn't see where the road went. And it was that was important. I couldn't see where the road went. And I saw that the road was wrapping around a hill, and it was around multiple hills. And it reminded me of the hills that I grew up in California, like in Northern California, like, you know, in like the Napa wine country or, you know, this area that I grew up in, the area, like there's coastal hills and there's these like, you know, valleys. There's tons of valleys. Wherever you have lots of hills, you have lots of valleys and you have these little winding roads. And I was shown a winding road that went behind a hill and I couldn't see where it went. And I was given the information or this idea of quote unquote a hidden valley. And I researched, like, I knew this was in Texas, and I knew that it was either north of Austin or northwest of Austin, but I was shown that it wasn't just Austin, but it was a city also like Austin. It's this dual symbolism. So check this out. This is weird. Well, this is how the divine operates. This is great. So a few days after I had this vision or whatever, and it was Austin and or a place like Austin, I was, because God, the major revelation God gave me last year also in 2012, like my, God was giving my son revelations. I was like, yeah, whatever, honey, you're watching the History Channel. But God did give me a revelation or two last year. And one of the major revelations last year was gathering. And one of one was gathering. I was like, wow, you keep saying this word to me, God, gathering. Like, I guess you're gathering your people. What's going on? What's going on with gathering? But the other one was get your house in order. Get your house in order. I kept hearing this like over and over again last year in 2012. So then this year, because of these visions, you know, I finally did that. And I got some confirmations about get your house in order. So I was getting my house in order. And I love that. Hi, Owl. And I was getting my house in order. And anyway, like, what was I talking about? The owl distracted me. I was getting my house in order and I was going through papers, and check this out. I mean, I was going through papers from my storage unit, right, I hadn't seen for years, okay, so this is really significant. I'm going through papers I haven't seen for years, and I'm throwing papers in the recycling bin. I throw this paper I wrote years ago, and it was weird because I remembered writing it, like I remembered my handwriting, and it said San Antonio. But I didn't remember why I wrote it. I didn't, you know, to this day, I don't remember why I wrote San Antonio on a piece of paper, and that's all it said. That's all it said. So I'm throwing away 1,000 papers. I'm literally liquidating my estate, literally, because God told me to. And I'm doing this, and I get this one paper, and it just says San Antonio. And it's like, oh, that's the place, like Austin. So look it up on the map. I don't know anything about Texas. I don't even never knew that Texas had hills, right? I'm like most people. I'm like have a stereotype of Texas. It's flat, It has sagebrush and armadillos. That's all I knew. I didn't know anybody there. I had been there when I was a baby one time. I'd never really been there. You know, God tells me to go to Texas. And so I get this paper, it says San Antonio. So I look it up on the map, and I was like, oh, that's like an hour away from Austin. That's like right next to Austin. That's like sister cities. And, oh, wow, right north of San Antonio is this place that people call the Hill Country. And it has these hills, like I saw in my vision, and these little roads that wrap around the hills, like I saw in my vision. And this whole Hidden Valley thing, check this out. So I had this idea about Hidden Valley because I saw the road that you couldn't see where it went behind the hill, and I knew there was a valley back there. And I was given the idea in this picture vision that that was a place of refuge, and that was connected to this camping scene I saw. You know, that God, you know, was like, get out of California and go to the Hill Country, right? And what was crazy was, like, a few days after I had that vision, I was at this person's house, like this family member's house that is really significant to me and is actually significant in all these prophecies, but that's a whole other story. But I didn't realize it at the time, and I was at that person's house, and I was helping that person move, and we had gone to the grocery store to get, like, to the natural foods grocery store to get some boxes for that person to be able to move, like some apple boxes or whatever. And one of the boxes, somebody had written, they had handwritten a sign on the box, and it said, Sacred Valley. And I saw that box and the word Sacred Valley, and I knew that God was telling me, you know, that's where I'm taking you and showing you to go. And I was like, holy moly, this is amazing.
Yeah. Well,
I have to find a Sacred Valley in Texas.
Are you aware that had Joseph Smith lived, the Mormons would have gone to Texas rather than Utah?
That's what I read, Otter, in wonderful piece of writing that you just put out recently.
Yep.
Well, reissued. This is
well, there's
a
book
that I read a long time ago.
Book written about it.
What is
the
name of that piece? The seer, the choice seer.
You can go to thechoiceseer.com and you can.
That's a very important document.
The Mormon Kingdom in Texas.
When I read that Joseph was going to take the saints to Texas after I saw those visions, just within the last few days, you know, I just about fell off my chair.
Well, he said the his last letter
but
to the High Council. His last letter to High Council, he said that if the Mormons didn't repent, that he said they'd probably go to the Rocky Mountains, but he says if they didn't, you know, start doing what they were supposed to do, that another race would be taken to another place in the Rockies, and they would redeem Zion.
Yeah. Totally. I totally
and
agree.
Zion is a tribal way of life. It's just like
the religion. I agree. It is a tribal society. It is a tribal. Right. Zion is a tribal traditional society. It is absolutely the restoration of our prehistoric societies of peace. Remnants which still exist today, but I also have to say I was born on June 27th, which was the day that Joseph Smith was assassinated in 1844, and I was born on June 27th, 1970, and I just feel like I never knew. I couldn't have created this myself, or, you know, I'm not trying to do this, but it's just weird that everything I do, it just feels like I'm just picking up, like, where Joseph left off, and not that there's not a million other people that also, you know, aren't obviously doing that, but you know, it's just really, it's interesting. You know, I'm not, you know, you can't make this stuff up. You can't make
Well, you know? I don't know whether you ever.
This proves that the divine exists. Like, the divine is real, people. It really is.
Well, I don't know whether you ever caught that, the revelation that I got back on spring solstice of 98, where I woke up in the morning and I was just told, in the future, the year 2005, it will be known as the year of the great havoc, because the weather will become so bad it may even shut down computers all over the planet. And wake up and write that down. So, I started this show in 2004. And
I've been listening since 2004.
Right, and Rabbi Michael Baron landed in Texas the day Katrina hit, and then he sent me an article of a UN climatologist meeting in the following November where they said that it was a year of weather havoc. But the real kicker was that in 2006, I found out about my Mayan sign, which was 9-eek.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just found out fairly recently that spring solstice of 98 was the beginning of the week of 9-eek. Mm. And you can't make that up either.
Oh, you know, yeah.
It's always like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why I said on my Facebook, just a couple Indians talking about Indian stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm left-handed,
Elizabeth
too.
Elizabeth has
so,
eek energy, too.
I am. I remember that from last year. Oh, I wanted to. Okay, I have to tell you guys my story about Mark and about how. Oh, goodness. What's the word? It just escaped me. That's terrible. Okay. Auspicious. Okay. And beyond. Okay. Check this out, you guys. So, okay. My birthday in 2012. We're talking about 2012 and all the craziness last year. It was true. It was all true. You know, I saw the adversaries rolling. That was easy for me to see, but it was harder for me to see God's role. But, oh, my goodness. No, there was really something going on last year. So, anyway, you guys were part of it. Okay. So, my birthday is June 27th. And this was part, okay, there's two parts of the weirdness. The first part was that my calendar birthday that Mark did was June 26th. Now, that calendar's birthday does not usually correspond to our, you know, conventional calendar birthday at all. And the fact that they were right next to each other last year was just, you know, we were on, you know, Prophecy Keepers last year being like, whoa, that's crazy, right? Okay, well, here's what else is crazy. This is what's crazy was it was either the first time or the second time. It doesn't matter. It was one of the first times. I have friends in common with James Mooney, even though I've never met James Mooney of the Oklava Native American Church. And but I just, like, got in touch with the Oklava Church in Utah to ask them if there was any branches or, people they knew that were out in the San Francisco area where I'm living right now. Out here, and there was in Berkeley, and I've lived and worked in Berkeley for years. I'm totally a Berkeley person, and I was, like, so blown away that there was people that he knew that were out here that were doing a Chinupa ceremony every week, and they were doing, medicine ceremonies and sweat lodges, and I was, like, could not even believe, you know, that I knew people in common that were, like, next to me. So I totally started going to Chinupa ceremonies out here in the East Bay. And so there was a Chinupa ceremony, and it was on a Tuesday in Berkeley. And check this out. I went there with my beloved fiance and Beau. And Beau and I went to a Chinupa ceremony in Berkeley, and it was on June 26th, and it was on my Mayan birthday. Mayan calendar birthday. It's Mayan calendar, right, Mark? Is that what you're calling it? Is Mayan? I just want to make sure it's not like Aztec. It's Mayan.
Mayan.
I know you guys have said this. I'm sorry. I was getting late. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the calendar stone for some reason right now. Anyway, okay. Anyway, it was that my Mayan birthday was on June 26th, and in my conventional birthday was the next day. And so we went to the Chinupa ceremony for my Mayan calendar birthday. And when we got to the house in Berkeley and we went inside, like right when we went inside of there was like a mirror that was like opposite of the door. And it said there, somebody put a sticker on the mirror, and the sticker said, "Happy birthday." And I was like, is my Mayan birthday today? Is my conventional birthday tomorrow? And somebody put a sticker and says, "Happy birthday," in the mirror, and I'm looking at it, I'm looking right at myself, and it says, "Happy birthday." And I was like, how crazy is that? But that is my life, like, every day, I have to say. Like, what's really cool about my life is I have one foot totally in the, like, intellectual, academic world, and then the other foot just completely in the mystical, experiential realm, and it's perfect. So it's a perfect balance.
I'm very blessed, very lucky. Well, you know, and the whole thrust of this show is to teach people what it's like to be in contact with Creator and So at least they know they're not alone when they start having strange experiences. And
well, that's kind of my hope for this show, too, you know, is to inspire people to having be able to have that kind of relationship with the Creator and those kind of experiences for themselves as well. So if one person can get that out of tonight's show, I pray that will be true.
So, yeah, there's another fellow up in the Bay Area that's his name escapes me right now, but a few months ago we sent out a press release about him becoming one of the officers of the church, and because he's doing a lot of research into cannabis and his name escapes me right now, but you. You may have already met him because he's in your area.
We'll have to send me some links. We'll have to talk for sure because that's one of my academic areas of expertise, and at least I can, legitimize it with academia, and, we've got the laws on our side these days, both as Native Americans and medical patients, and, I've got the academic stuff.
Did you know there's an Oklahoma branch in the Hill Country?
I just recently discovered that.
Yeah, what had happened was...
Send me some more links, please.
Well, Chief Rogers was getting... he was thinking about a civil rights suit against the county because they were refusing to give his IRS-registered Native American church tax-free status. I told him, I said, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is just make it a branch of Oklahoma. I said, all the legal work's been done. I said, literally, the when you become an Oklahoma branch, the federal government becomes your bitch, literally.
I agree.
And, of course, he's in White County, and, the guy that the county was named after was a famous murderer of Cherokees, and the people that ended up walking the Trail of Tears were the planter, sedentary type.
My Cherokees did not go on the Trail of Tears. They are still in Georgia, South Carolina.
Right. Well, see, the real Stone Age, kind of Cherokees were the ones that ended up going to Arkansas beginning in between 1817 and 1838, and some of them went to Texas. And the reason why we're federally recognized in Mexico is that because Chief Bowles felt like he was getting screwed over by the Texans, he was commissioned in the Mexican Army. And there were Cherokees that participated in the battle to retake San Antonio from the Texans, and we even had captured a lance and a battle flag and stuff like that from that battle, and which is in Mexico City today, right next to the captured battle flag from the Alamo. They were glad to get that back because a member of the tribe had been sitting. Chicago for 150 years or more.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like this is almost like karmic. I don't know. We're all picking up where we left off or something.
Well, it's part of the the Bible calls it restoration.
The prophecies are being fulfilled, and it all has to do with restoration. My work has everything to do with restoration, which I never set out to do, but it's just what's going on. It's
hope we have another name for it. They just said all the old medicine societies that had died out would be brought back to life again. And
I have been thinking about that all day. That has been on my mind all day from reading, some of your websites, and I've been thinking about that,
So it's happening. Oh, one other point I want to make. When I had, it was either Hunbot's Men or Carlos Barrios several years ago, and we were talking about this 2012 end date, they said, we were always taught that it could be 15 years either way depending mm-hmm. on, you know, what was going on in the world, you know, with how people were behaving. The interesting thing about it is when you add 15 to 2012, you get 2017, which is the end date for Daniel's timeline.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I've been thinking a lot about Daniel's timeline recently,
yeah,
for sure.
Right. And,
definitely.
You know, when I was at Green Corn Ceremony here a couple months ago, Carlo Carlino, I hadn't seen him since I was in Missouri in 1999. He's the eighth keeper of Sitting Bull's Pipe. He got up at the council, at the social fire, and he said, "We've got 3 years left." And I said, you know, I stood up and I said, "Ho." And I said, "You'll have to excuse me for interrupting
Ooh,
you."
Oh, you said ho?
But I said, back in 1977, I was asking, you know, how long do we have? And that night I had a dream of a face of a clock, and a brilliant light, red light flashed, and the hands of the clock melted, and the number 16 flashed.
Wow.
And so, 3 years, you know, 3 years from now, and that's that 2016-2017 period. But we want to be out of here by the time the night of the long knives happens.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, the final piece of my puzzle, let's see, was I have been attending local California tribal Indian ceremonies for like the past like 13 years. And so this last year I was there and I knew that it was the last time I was ever going to be at those ceremonies and at that place. And this is a traditional roundhouse, like in like the foothills of the Sierra Mountains. And it's really amazing. And, basically I felt like this revelation, like God was telling me, cause like I knew that like I was leaving California and I wasn't going to ever be there again. And, I felt that that I was really inspired to find, because I was going to be finding the Mississippi River. Usually, guys, don't distract me. I love you guys for that. It's awesome. And so I thought that I felt inspired that because I was finally, for the first time in my life, because, like, the farthest east I usually go, I mean, I've been to the East Coast, I've been to my ancestral homeland in South Carolina and Georgia and all up and down the East Coast from New York to Florida, which I even have, like, tribal ancestry. Like, I have other, I'm mostly, like, Cherokee, but, like, I'm said to be from at least five tribes, like, in the Southeast and blah, blah, blah. But I felt, because I was finally going to Texas, going to be east of the Mississippi, that like, and close and right next to Oklahoma, like finally close to the Cherokee, like close enough. And I felt like Creator was telling me, like, you know, it's finally time to like find your people and like, you know, learn, you know, those ways and et cetera, et cetera. And I was just like, wow. And so then when I found out, like, you know, Chief Rogers was, like, in the hill country, like, right where I was trying to go, I was like, that's crazy. Wow. That's very cool. Yep. That's usually how it goes.
Well, are you familiar, with Zeta Talk?
That does ring a bell, but I don't know.
Zeta Talk is a website purporting to be communications from our first let me say that the Hopi and the Zuni, all the Puebloans, they remember the last times, the four times the earth turned over, that the Ant people took them underground and aliens look like Ant, you know.
I know a lot about a lot of that stuff.
But
the Zetas
say,
they
actually put a map out showing the areas that were going to be flooded, and you know, it shows that Austin will get flooded, but the Hill Country won't.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned the flood line, and you know what's interesting is before you mentioned the flood line, was I saw an ad for a cabin I really wanted. Then they were like, it's above the flood line. And I was like, yeah. You know what's weird was because when I wasn't like planning my life by like what Creator wanted me to do, like I was just had my own agenda. My whole agenda was, you know, I was going to go to Utah because that's where my friends and family are, and that's where a lot of the latter-day prophecies take place, especially with the Dream Mind, because, you know, I'm very – you know how connected to the Dream Mind I am? You know what's insane is my great-grandmother, who was absolutely a prophetess and a medium, and my mother totally inherited her gift, but – she is buried in the plot in Spanish Fork, Utah, literally next to John Coyle in the Spanish Fork Cemetery in Utah.
Wow.
Literally buried next to each other. And I feel that that's very symbolic and very meaningful. And I know it's meaningful because I'm totally a dream miner. But anyway, speaking of dreams and dreamers, oh my gosh, my dreams, and then I was going to write my PhD dissertation on S.E. Parrish, the dreamer of the Pomo Indian people in California, and blah, 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 and dreamers and dreams. Wow. Yeah, I've been having some dreams. But that was my main dreams, and so the clincher was what I was just talking about. I'm like, what was I just talking about? So much
to
talk about.
I know it's when your mind can really get to reason, but I'll send you a link to what Nancy Leader was talking about. But I remember seeing the map. Well, what was interesting is
the flood line in Utah, that was my plan. Oh, I'll finish my point. Was when it was my agenda, I was planning to move above the flood line in Utah County because there's prophecies about flooding in you know, the Great Basin area as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, you're
that was the connection. Just so I don't sound crazy. No, I was like, that was the connection, was the flooding and above the flood line. And, you know, and I had a plan originally to live above the flood line in Utah. And God said, no, live above the flood line in hill country. So that's how it's all connected. I'm not crazy. Continue, Otter. Please continue.
Try not to breathe into the mic too much because it's making quite a bit of noise. But
okay.
That's okay. Everybody does it. But, anybody out there listening, you can just put in Zeta, Z-E-T-A, flood map, and it'll lead you to the place that it'll show you what's going to be flooded. And I'm sending that link to Elizabeth right now, and I'll send it to. But, yeah, it's, back in 1991 was, It was right after Dimitri Dudeman came to Utah.
Oh, yeah. I love Dimitri Dudeman. And Fire Without Burning, Google it, Amazon.com.
Well, I went to see him, and there's more to the story, but afterwards I just decided I'm going to get connected to Creator. And I knew, because I've been, you know, to Rolling Thunder and other elders, I knew you never went to an elder, you know, without a question. And so I asked the Creator, I said, why did Joseph Smith tell the Latter-day Saints that they were going to have to follow a horseshoe-shaped route to the south, and they'd have to cross the nearest bridge over the Colorado River, you know, on their way back rather than going straight back across the plains. And my body started to vibrate, and in my mind I heard the words "the flood." Well, when I shared that with Talks to White Buffalo, and he laughed. This is the winter of 2008 and 2009, and I said, "What's so funny?" He said, "Well," he said, "I was up." I mean, this guy's, you know, been a sun dancer for many years, and the Oglala elders used to stop off at his house all the time because he lived in on the way between the Dakotas and California. But he says, I was doing a vision quest on top of Lookout Mountain, And he says, mm-hmm. I saw the wave come across the Great Plains, and he says it literally flushed Denver like a toilet. But, yeah. I had a dream where I saw the aftermath. It was just a lot of water on the Great Plains that didn't belong there.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Well, hello, John Paul finally let the cat out of the bag in 1985. It wasn't publicized, but, it's on the front page, prophecykeepers.com, and he just said, it's just if we were to tell the world that, millions of people would be swept off of entire continents by sheets of ice and water, that's not something so much, we'd want to be,
Wow.
And but that's what the third prophecy of Fatima was all about. And Ratzinger, the next pope, concurred.
Yep.
And it was all about us. It would be caused by a star, a certain star or comet. And of course, that's what the Hopi all also said. And probably the periodic return that happens every few thousand years of an object that comes in from outer space. Speaking of which, if you'd like to, there's something I'd like to play. It's about 15 minutes, but it's a NASA employee that speaks out about what he knew about. Let's listen to that. And
sure.
Because he's talking about, he and I grew up during the same period in California, and I remember this issue of this magazine he was talking about. So, I'll take us off mic and we'll listen to this for a few minutes.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space, because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went in and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone, and this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it, and I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball, because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street. And we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire, giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction. And you could see the planet circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully nothing in this mess will hit us, even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible. It says we can expect all kinds of problems. We were looking at asteroids right close to this thing. There's asteroids that are floating around right near that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across. And as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud. And you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will talon 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, it's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail, and if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay? Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay, well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it, and until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We knew, we could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud, but as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to tell how hot it is, I was told that it was, they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees, but, you know, I don't really know, if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it.
Right.
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings, because, you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings, because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us, listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They'll lose their, they won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on, because this thing will gut their brain. And it, and you know, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens, that nobody will care because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong, because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant kicked the earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told, 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck, so that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are, because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy, that this could happen. And very easily.
And I know that we're back on the air. I know that sounds really strange, but, you know, it's a yeah. fulfillment of of the predictions of what would happen after the ghost dance, that topsoil would be renewed and so forth and so on. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Ghost dance.
But this guy worked on the Hubble project before it got shut down, and you can't
guy. I saw that in Isaiah, in the book of Isaiah, what he was talking about years ago. I've been seeing that for years.
It's all there.
The pole shift, yeah.
It's
and
all
the memory
there.
Thing. The memory thing. Oh, yeah.
Well, there's your zombie apocalypse. I mean, you know, why is the
yeah.
I mean, why does the U.S. government have a zombie apocalypse website?
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be a joke.
Right?
Well, there,
go to
you know,
my website,
there's,
people.
Yeah.
The zombie apocalypse is real. Go to my website.
Well, and then...
I dare you. For Halloween, do it.
Yeah, and then... oh, I'm trying to remember his name now. Go ahead. There's another thought, but go ahead.
Too many
tell
thoughts.
Us something I have to look up here. Oh no, Lee Standing Bear of Monotaca. He had a vision of what was going to happen, and I'll send you a link to that too, because that's
please.
Really interesting.
Please.
Yeah,
what
I'll look
to Mark?
That up.
How is Mark doing?
He's still
Mark's
there.
Fine. Just
I know.
Yeah,
like,
I think the one thing,
know,
blue...
like any, like I don't know, like what do you think about all of this stuff?
I think it doesn't require another object coming in. I think we're sitting
okay.
on top of.
Okay, we can let Otter and I just keep going. That's fine.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Otter. Oh.
Can y'all
right.
hear me?
Yeah, we
I can hear you. What happened to Otter? Oh, there you are. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we're.
I don't mean to interrupt.
Going to get hit with a lot more than just flooding.
Oh. Okay.
The time frame,
wait,
I'm not
what?
Certain of, but I think the flooding might not even be the
well,
major
wait,
so problem.
Well, about the flooding that's already been going on in Colorado, and even before that, in what, like Tennessee, or I mean, there's been a lot of flooding already going on for the last few years.
A lot in Europe.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, it's been flooding. Are you crazy? Are you kidding me?
That's a. That's one of the
I've been posting
precursor
videos
signs
to my blog
the other event.
Of crazy, yeah, just the craziness of it all, yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I think we're potentially facing quite a barrage of potential problems.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all
you
right.
can look.
Well,
you can look that up. It's Standing Bear's Vision on the Mountain.
Cool.
Just Google that, and you can read what Lee Standing Bear. And
I
you
will.
Know, the interesting thing was is the first time I read through this, I
mm-hmm.
read something, and it
mm-hmm.
would it would actually be illegal for me to repeat what I saw on it. But
right.
I called I called him up and I said, do you realize, you know, you've got something here on this website that could possibly get you a visit from government agencies. He says, what are you talking about? And I told him, you know, what I saw. He says, that's not on there. Well, that's not the first time I've ever seen something, you know, written down on a page or actually I've seen television commercials that were at least once that were never produced because I checked. And what it was President Kimball was encouraging young men to get a, before they go to college, to get a trade. And that was never produced. That commercial was never produced, I found out. And then I, in 2006, I found out that the talk that he gave in the Tabernacle in March of 1977 was completely different from the one that everybody else heard.
So you can get
revelation from all different.
And just as academic, like, that's not cool, people. Anyway, moving right along. They've made people redo their speeches, like, even on video, and then pretend like that was the original video, and they don't tell you. That's not okay. As an academic and legally, that raises legal issues, that raises ethical issues, that raises moral issues, and that raises academic issues, and that really pisses me off. And I think that pisses the creator off even more. Just saying. But anyway, Otter, somebody,
I ran along. I happened to run into a guy on the internet that was in the same building at the same time. I said, what do you think? You know, he's talking about the king's priesthood. And I said, I never did for that. He says, that's not what he talked about. I said, are you sure? And he went to Distribution Center and looked to conference talks. And sure enough, he heard something completely different than I did. So it's crazy some of the ways that.
That's not cool. Anyway, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Firsthand, experientially, I can document this stuff, man. My life has been crazy, and you know what I love about it? I can document every bit of it, legally, academically. I've got journals, man. I've been keeping records. Mormons are a record-keeping people.
That's what it says. That's what it says in Habakkuk. It says to write your visions down, keep a record of them.
Mormon commandments, too, and Mormon revelations. Oh, yeah, man, you got to write that stuff down. Well, hey, the Book of Mormon, that's how we got the Book of Mormon in the Bible. And other scriptures, I'm sure, in other cultures, as you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wait,
so,
for the prophecy keepers, I have been keeping those prophecies, as have you and others.
So
that's what we
do.
Just a couple of Indians talking about Indian stuff.
Well, Mark, what are you? You were telling me something about what's going on with you this week.
What's going on with me?
Yeah.
That's what I was saying earlier.
Well, a lot of things that go back to my visit with Hopi Elder Grandfather Martin.
Oh, I'd love to hear about
anything. Particular Aztec codex that he was talking with me of, showed me, and I went and looked at it later, and he had the bottom two-thirds of it missing, so I found that part, and then... But this particular codex, it shows a set of the above world and the underworld, or our world and the underworld, in four sequences, or the four worlds. And in the fourth world, our cycle, he pointed to each of these things as this guy kind of squatting down, has kind of like the altar in front of someone behind him, right? And in the fourth world, he pointed to underneath the guy's butt. And in the previous world, there was this symbol that was underneath the ground. In the fourth world, though, this guy didn't have that. And Grandfather Martin pointed there and he says, look, no roots.
Wow.
The roots were gone.
Wow.
And so it's been coming to me to look at this. Now, what I was given is he didn't have the underworld part, and he didn't have the sequence of glyphs underneath the underworld. And I've been looking at that and how basically I've added in to that the fifth world. And the glyphs sequences that are going to happen in that codex for the fifth world. And I just actually just finished that today, adding that on. And so, and I'm going through the process of reviewing that with a few people to see what their thoughts are on it. So that's kind of things from the past coming back, and it has to do with a lot with healing. A lot of it's been the idea of healing, generational healing across families, but also healing across entire world cycles.
Yeah, wow.
So in other words, a lot of problems, you know, if you look at cultures, they fighting with each other, people this and that, and little skirmishes and stuff. Problems in the first world, second world, third world, and we keep repeating this.
Right.
So the question is, you know, if we move into the next world, the fifth world, do we want to do it again? Hopefully, you know, we have a chance. We're moving on a chance to where, I mean, a lot of what's happening in our world is the same. We're most of our patterns matching what's been done before in the previous world cycles. But I think there are also groups of people that have a desire to change it and do something different and not necessarily just keep doing the same thing over and over. And the question is, you know, are they going to be able to do that, or are they going to split, like in the Bible where it says the wheat and the chaff separate, and one group goes one way and the other group's majority go the other way, the zombies stay zombies and the rest of us just kind of part ways, or do we figure out how to pull everybody through it? That's, who knows?
I'm just praying that the most people are going to make it somehow, some way. Come on. Come on, God. Goddess, give us some miracles. Come on, please.
Well, what's your take on the shutdown, guys?
I don't know. I'm off the grid right now. Myself.
Well,
apparently the government is too. I'm off grid, people. I've heard rumors that the government is as well.
Right.
I literally am off the grid, man. I'm off the grid.
Well, there was a lot of people, what was it, here yesterday or today, that their food stamp cards didn't work.
Oh, really? Not only that, but in many areas, like people's, for the last few months, like it's whole sectors of society, you know, one day it's something, one day it's some people, some whole bank, you know, everybody's bank card doesn't work, or another day it's like some other thing, you know, it's just, this has been going on for a while, and government stuff too. Oh yeah, people not getting their checks. I know people, unemployment, like for some reason people didn't get their unemployment check, and if they wanted to get it, they had to go through this whole weird process just to get their check again. And I was like, that's just like weird, like what the heck, you know what I mean? Like a lot of this weird stuff has been going on for a while.
Well, you know, one of the things the Hopi elders said was...
Oh, my gosh, you guys, 2013. Okay, get this. It's 2013. Tomorrow is October 13th. That's the anniversary of the Templars. And Otter, interestingly enough, put one of my favorite pictures of myself up on the website, the Manti Templars, my Templar ancestors. I'm a descendant of Templars. Yes, yeah, so tomorrow is the anniversary of the Templars' execution. Yeah, and it's that's where Friday the 13th, why it became unlucky.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
just
right.
Saying. Anyway, moving right along. And Templars and Cherokees in the Ark, yeah, it's all connected. Templars on the East Coast before Columbus and all that stuff. The, you know, people in America have genealogies that go quote unquote too far back. I want to do a whole show. Oh my gosh, I want to send you guys a link to like these pictures I put online of my ancestors who were all these crazy cultures married to each other and had the most amazing culture and homestead and, you know, amazing people like that were all mixed together. And I have pictures of them and genetically, I mean, such a fascinating study. I mean, you could just take this whole set of pictures of these amazing people that were related to each other and you would never know it. Like brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, cousins, they were so genetically diverse that like you wouldn't even believe they were related. And they were, you know, within one or two or three generations, like Jewish, African-American, American Indian, Scotch Irish, you know, and it was this whole culture in like the Appalachian Mountains and like the border of Georgia and South Carolina, and they had a whiskey still that was in the family for like a century, even when my dad was like a little boy, and we have the pictures of it like, you know, generations back, and it's just like, it's awesome. I love that culture. It's very cool, very interesting. And oh my gosh, there was a very significant, two most significant sessions at the Sunstone Symposium in Salt Lake City ever, I think, in my opinion, were one on like the multi like ethnic cultures of like the Southeast and how a lot of certain like people of interesting, like these two women did genetic testing and they did this whole thing about how they realized like a lot of early Mormons were of really interesting genetic stock and had a lot of like, you know, Jewish and, you know, whatever, like, heritage, like, that was, like, diaspora, you know, and it was lost, and, like, you know, lost, like, American Indian heritage, or, you know, just diaspora, American Indian, you know, these various tribal societies. And I feel like what's interesting about the Mormon tradition is that because it's all about the restoration of this prehistoric golden age, and, you know, this, like, original primordial, like, you know, culture or whatever, like pan-human global culture that was like a golden age, I don't know. But anyway, like restoration, I feel like the Mormon tradition is very, at least growing up in the LDS version of it, because, you know, there's many denominations and sects like within the Mormon, traditions. But like, you know, the largest, most well-known one is the LDS one. And like, just like being seventh generation, like on my mom's side of the family, like I felt like I had the benefit of growing up in a traditional tribal society, kind of in a way. Like the Mormon tradition is very much, because yeah, it is very tribal. You know, there's a lot of writing I've done about it and could do links. You know, I want to post like, you know, as an addendum to this show, and we should do another show. And I wanted to do more preparation, actually, and do a website of links and, you know, interesting things that we would probably be talking about, or, you know, and I will, you know, I will. I haven't had access to the Internet. Like I said, I've been off-grid, but, you know, I'll do that. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. But I feel like because of the diaspora of all this, and Mormonism was all about restoration, and so, yeah, it very much reinforced those genetics and that morphogenetic field, as Rupert Sheldrake, the biologist in England, would call it, like, of those traditional tribal society lineages. Like, it really, I was able to be raised in that way, you know, like, not in those original, earlier cultures. But again, it's like the Hopi, or was it the Hopi prophecy about the medicine societies like being restored like eventually, and the ghost dance was all about restoration too, in a way, like is very congruent with, I don't know, your biblical revelation, biblical cleansing prophecies, Hopi prophecies about cleansing and restoration. And yeah, I don't know, it's all about restoration though. Interestingly, the archaeologist Maria Gimbutas, who's somebody that has obviously influenced my work greatly, I feel like that she was very much a seer and a prophetess in the creator's restoration scheme of our knowledge of our prehistory. I mean, there was whole, like, prehistoric civilizations that were, like, more sophisticated and spiritual and amazing in a lot of ways than, like, we are, and, like, our seriously arrogant, like, you know, kind of like, I don't know, society today is just like, we think we're like the epitome that, you know, of all that has ever been like in this world. And it's like, are you serious? Like, no. But I don't know. Anyway, we could go on and on about a million things. So I don't know. What's going on, guys? What time is it?
Well,
how
I
long
thought,
have we been talking?
Oh, we got about 20 minutes left. I thought just for fun, I want to get, if I can get her on the line, I want to get Shahawin. I'm going to surprise her. She has no idea that I'm going to call. But this is the lady that saw the flooding of Tennessee in 2004, as I recall, and warned the head of her congregation. And but let's hang on a second. Let me make sure I got the number right. Let's see if we can get her on the line here. It'll be a surprise, but I want you to meet her. She has no idea we're going to call.
Oh, my gosh.
She is. She's
right, let me know if there's any problems with the sound quality. I'm on speakerphone, so let me know.
Yeah. We'll give her a few rings here.
No, you reached 437.
Oh.
No. I can't come to the phone at this time, so please give me my number.
It's awful late.
As possible. Have a great day.
Hey, Shahawin, it's Blue Otter. Sorry to be calling so late, but Spirit suggested I might give you a call. And if you're up, why don't you call us at 347-996-3318, and we'll be on until, if you're in Mountain Time, it'll be on. We'll be on until 11 p.m. So anyway, sorry to call so late, but thought I'd give you a call, give you an invite. And if anybody else is out there and wants to call in, now would be a good time. And but you know if you feel like you know, we don't have to take up the whole two hours, that's fine. And because it gets mentally, you know, when you're a guest on a talk show, You're almost mentally exhausted even before you even start, and there's a lot of mental energy going on, and sometimes
yeah,
you just
exactly.
get, you know. So you know, whatever you want to do, we've got.
We could talk for hours, and so you know, I hope we can just do it again, like, or we could,
well,
you
yeah.
know, we could talk for a while.
Well, who's what's some of your
you
favorite? You got
Spirit,
any favorite?
Thanks.
You got any favorite native or? Songs you'd like to play for a couple minutes and just take a breather?
Do you have any Bill Miller? Do you have Bill Miller?
I know he did the... I haven't got him. He's the one that did the Ghost Dance song. I haven't...
He has a cool album. Or, do you have any Robbie Robertson?
Yeah, I've got...
do you have any Little Wolf? Little Wolf.
Yeah, I've got... I've got Wes Studi, and he's portraying Wovoka, talking about the ghost dance. That's
oh,
a minute.
Anything
if
about
I say.
Anything
yeah.
about Wovoka or the ghost dance for years. You don't even know. Oh, and the James Mooney connection and James Mooney. Oh my gosh, we could just go on and on.
This was in a you know, there was a lot of mini series that were out a few years back, but this is Wes Studi portraying Wovoka. I'll take us off mic here for the next minute and a half.
All right.
A vision came to me when the sun went into shadow and I lay dying. And in my death, I saw the heavens of the white robe. Yes, it is as they describe it. But also there, my children, all the Indians that ever roamed this earth. all your beloved ancestors and mine, and those young ones who were taken by the white man's diseases. Do not grieve for them. They want you to know that they are happy. Yes. And you should not grieve for yourselves, because here is what the white robes did not tell you. The white man, my children, will soon be no more.
The time is now when the Indian will triumph.
He's still in the rapture of the vision. A great Indian holy man, Lavoka, is speaking through him.
You mean they had holy men like saints?
They sure did, and Lavoka was one of the greatest. Once even Christ appeared to him.
And the whole spiritual wisdom of the great holy men of the Indian tradition is now what the young people of the world are looking for.
I wonder if I have the guts.
This is crazy, man. You pull that trigger and we'll never get out of here alive.
The young whites, they know there is a supernatural world and a great spirit, and they try to reach the great spirit. They try by drugs. They are made to do this because their religions no longer believe in the other world. Heaven is not out there. The other world is here. The great spirit, Messiah, the Christ, are here in this pit. Your people, my loved ones, there's a thin veil separating us from them. The whites do not know how to reach through that veil. They do not have the belief, and they cannot touch their loved ones or the other spirits.
I could do it. I could kill them.
Yeah, sure you can, but not now, man. Let's get out of here and get some help.
And lastly, you must learn the dance. The dance of friendship and welcome, in which all whites who come to you with open hearts must be taught the dance in the Indian way. Rise up now, and I will teach you the dance exactly as Wovoka has seen it should be done.
Yeah, we'll be back, but not with help. I'm going to get him all by myself.
Against my love, your law that goes there. shall live again. We shall live again. My sister above, but she has red paint. Like a Latter-day Saint. You got the big drum in the distance, the blackbirds in the sky. That's the sound that you hear when the buffalo cry. But you don't stand a chance against my prayers. You don't stand a chance against my love. Your love that goes stand. Your love that goes stand. We shall live again. We shall live again. Crazy Horse was a mystic. He knew the secret of the trail. And Sitting Bull, a great apostle of the ghost band. Come on, the mansion. Come on, Shoshone. Come on, Shire. We shall live again. We shall live again. Come on, Rapture. Come on, Cherokee.
About the ghost dance for years and years, I can't even tell you.
Well, you know, the wild thing, you know, was you know, Joseph Smith kind of got on the outs with the Lord because he made some mistakes, and he was told, and this is, I think it's in section 85 of the Utah Doctrine and Covenants, and he was praying earnestly, and you know, when am I going to see you again? And Jesus told him, well, trouble me no more about this, but if you live to be 85 years old, you'll see me again. Well, his 85th birthday was five days before.
Lived.
Right, his 85th birthday would have been, you know, anniversary was 5 days before the massacre at Wounded Knee that happened, because Jesus started visiting with the Indians at Walker Lake in 1889.
Well, I love the accounts which the original James Mooney, the ancestor of the contemporary James Mooney, collected, which I had that. And I had, I had copies of all the songs, all the photos of them doing the ghost dance, all of the lyrics to all of the songs with the music, with the notes. Like, I tried to get my hands on everything, the pictures of the garments that they were given that were kind of analogous to Mormon temple garments, like of protection and whatnot, I don't know, covenant,
Brian,
you know what I love about those stories, though, the ethnologies or whatever that Mooney collected was the stories of the quote-unquote Indian telegraph, how there were indigenous people from not just the Americas, but apparently, like, very far away, like, traditional tribal peoples that the quote-unquote Indian telegraph, they had dreams. They had visions. They were shown where to go, i.e. Hill Country. They were shown to go to Walker Lake. The accounts say that there were people from really far away there. A lot of people down there.
They came all the way from South America.
And you know what my other favorite part? You know what my other favorite part of those stories and those ethnographies and whatever are that Jesus, when he appeared to the Indians and the indigenous peoples or tribal peoples, I don't like the word indigenous, the traditional tribal peoples at Walker Lake, where he appeared as half traditional tribal person / half, I don't know, whatever.
Well, Boca said he didn't look like a white.
He was like white / Indian. He said he didn't.
He wasn't as dark as them, and he wasn't as white as a white person.
But they said even his dress, though, his clothing was like half and half. I just thought there was something really interesting about that. But anyway, just saying.
Well, did if you look at my Facebook page, you'll see I've lived in about 30 places. And in 1998, briefly, I was in grad school. And had I not moved and spent a few months in grad school, I never would have been in a position to hear a certain TV show at a certain time. It was called ABC News Tonight, and it was an account of a being that visited the Tana Islanders in the South Pacific. And he basically gave them the same instructions that Jesus told the Indians at Walker Lake. Don't join any of the white man's religions. And he wasn't as dark as them or as white as a white man. He spent a year with them. He gave him a special drink to drink and gave a special ceremony. But that was when the French missionaries were. Yeah. And they just called him John Cum, but they said nowadays they call it a cargo cult because they knew America someday would save them, and they did during World War II. But it was like
the Spanish, the counterfeit. You know, the Americans were the counterfeit, but of the prophecies or whatever, they were the forerunner, they were the harbinger. I don't know. Jesus came, come back again. He always comes. Hey, I was going to tell you earlier, this comes full circle, because I knew of an Irish account of the resurrected Jesus Christ appearing to people in Ireland, which I thought was kind of added to my collection, because I was kind of like Glenn Kimball and, you know, people I collected. You collect like the prophecy. I always collected the prophecies, too, of all the cultures, but also, I don't know. Yeah, Glenn Kimball did a lot of that collecting, kind of folklore and whatnot, but and Jesus and all the different cultures, both as immortal with his rich uncle Joseph of Arimathea, who, you know, owned ships and traveled around the world, but also then as an immortal when he was resurrected, you know, and there's all kinds of interesting accounts about Jesus and other cultures, or, you know, a Messiah. I don't know. Yeah, we could talk.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's and there was Tony Bushby wrote a book. I can't remember what it's called right now, but there's a lot of different accounts.
The reference for my Jesus in Ireland, though, was Celtic Wisdom. It was John Matthews, I think, or, you know, John and or Caitlin Matthews. So just anyway, I like to give references here and there.
Well, you know, what's really interesting, we've come a long way, but, you know, before 1998, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which was written by one person that's used by mental health professionals, the DSM-3,
people that hear voices. And 5, yeah.
Well, yeah, before the DSM-4, which is done by committee, it just said anybody that hears voices is schizophrenic. But then they, DSM-4, they changed that to say that, you know, there's cultural differences and a lot has changed, and
yes, that's good. Yeah, I know. It definitely, thank goodness, it is rewritten periodically. Thank goodness.
Well, we'll have to. Hey, Mark, you got any
any parting comments?
No.
I appreciate you. I want to apologize. I forgot to let them know we're going to have a live show tonight. And by the way, let's take a look at the schedule before we go and let you know what's coming up. We've got about 180 show archives, and we're doing two or three shows a month now. And I'm working pretty closely with Bear and Company. And so we have on the 16th, we have Patricia Brooks, who author of Message from the Animals. And then we're going to have Adam Yellowbird on the 18th, talking about what's coming up with his organization, Sedona, with the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom. And then on the 20th, Nick Brink, I believe he's a PhD, is author of Power of Ecstatic Trance, is going to be coming out. So we're busy. We're trying to move out and do more shows and gather more listeners. And so we encourage everybody that's listening to forward these links to other folks. And I apologize for the hoarseness, but we appreciate you being our guest. We'll have to do it again.
Thank you. I'd love to. We could definitely talk for hours, so there'd definitely be a lot to talk about. And I could definitely get a lot of new listeners interested in your show, so I'm really excited. It's nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
I'm glad I got to talk to you again and do it. Mark, thank you again for the reading.
You bet.
Well, you're welcome.
We'll let you go, and we'll put you guys. We'll just go into the green room and roll our outro music. And folks out there, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. The very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Let the truth